I find that so funny that the things that you didn't get as concerned about actually ended up being like the actual legit things that you should have been freaking out about.
So on the Netflix movies, I need to make sure I'm just...
Just freak out about everything.
Freaking out as much as possible.
Welcome to Talking Beasts.
From NarniaWeb.com.
Where we explore the world of C.S. Lewis.
And keep a watchful eye.
On the latest Narnia movie news, this
is Talking Beasts.
Welcome everyone to our season finale. This is Glumpuddle.
And I'm Jim Fan.
And we're going to take a walk down memory lane here. I love doing stuff like this. We're going to be taking a look back at the Narnia headlines, reports, stories, rumors, etc. about the Narnia movies that freaked us out the most. And basically ask the question, did we get it right? Was our reaction justified? But first off, Jim Fan, you're back.
Yay! Yeah, it's been a while. Pretty much this whole season, right?
And I guess we can pretty much copy-paste the usual stuff we say when Jim Fan comes back. So yeah, you've been gone for a while, and you've been traveling all around the world, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I was abroad, as one would say.
Hopefully get you back here for the next season more.
That's the plan.
As a welcome back present, you're going to get stumped, potentially, at the end of this episode.
Yay! You can sense my enthusiasm from here.
I really can. Enthusiasm for Narnia podcasting. Or maybe it's just enthusiasm for the sense of community that comes from anticipating movies together, whether they turn out well or not.
Yes.
There's a C.S. Lewis quote comes to mind from The Four Loves. C.S. Lewis said that friendship is born at the moment when one man says to another, "What? I thought I was the only one." And so what's been so cool about Narnia Web and the community that it's built is that it's cool to anticipate these movies, and when there's trailers coming out or leaked footage or leaked reports or something like that, rumors about what they're doing with the movie, it's so much fun to anticipate and speculate and talk about it with other fans and be reminded, oh, I'm not the only one that cares about this. There's other people too. Now, for our sanity's sake, would it be better if we just waited until the movie came out? Probably. But where's the fun in that?
Yeah. I think for me, the anticipation is so much a part of the product. Like, I remember, obviously, like, the Narnia movies themselves, well, most of them, some of them, are very near and dear to my heart. But it's more the process and being able to be a part of the whole anticipation and, you know, like, counting down for trailers and talking about the latest production stills and, you know, speculation. Oh, so much speculation.
Yeah, that's my favorite part.
It was really fun. And I've particularly been going down memory lane recently because I've been kind of doing some stuff on my website. Actually, I've kind of been preparing to pull it down just because it's been like 10 years and it's, you know, I don't really do stuff on my website, spareroom.net anymore. But it just reminded me of all the hours
that
I spent.
That broke my heart when you mentioned that.
Yeah, it just reminded me of all the like happy hours I spent, you know, making that website and doing all the things for it and like the cool connections and contacts I got to have through it. And I was like, yeah, you know, no, like it's just part of the whole process, and I just really loved it.
Jim Fan, we haven't even really started, and you're already making me cry and get all nostalgic. We've always introduced you as and Jim Fan, the webmaster of spareroom.net.
You know, it'll be around in some capacity. It's just, you know.
In our hearts.
In our hearts. But, you know, the podcast is still here. That's been around for, woof.
Yeah, I mean, the movies came out in, Wardrobe came out in 2005, Jim Fan. That's 14 years ago.
Man, we're so old.
All us old-timers reflecting back on the old days. Old Narnia. Old Narnia Web.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, so looking forward to these new Netflix movies, regardless of whether they're good or bad, I am really looking forward to the journey getting there. And the old community, a lot of the old community is still around. There's a big new community that has sprung up recently as well I'm looking forward to. I went ahead and posted recently a post in the Talking Beasts Facebook group just asking, hey, what are some things you guys remember from anticipating the Narnia movies that kind of freaked you out the most. And Alicia mentioned the Nicole Kidman rumor, which was a huge mess. That was before your time, Jim Fan. But
yes, rumors.
Rumors that Nicole Kidman was going to play the White Witch, which turned out, and then for a while it was rumored that she had agreed to a 7-movie deal to play the narrator in the Narnia movies, and that just escalated and escalated. Kevin mentioned the time Ben Barnes said there would be pitched battles in the Don Treader movie, and we all like, what does he mean by pitched battles? Does he literally mean pitched battles? What are they adding to this book?
Little did we know.
I'm sure it doesn't get any worse than that. And then Marcus mentioned director Michael Apted's infamous quote where he said they were basing parts of Don Treader on the books, quote, the book C.S. Lewis didn't write. That became a favorite kind of joke whenever they were making changes. Oh, I guess they're basing it on the book that Lewis didn't write.
Clearly, because I'm not sure where else that came from.
Right. Not C.S. Lewis. So what we've done here is I've picked out 3 things that stand out to me in my memory or just things I thought would be fun to talk about. And Jim Fan, you've done the same. And we've arranged them in chronological order, which is in this case is the same as publication order. So, you know, doesn't matter. And we're just going to go through these and reminisce and see, okay, what was the reaction at the time when it first came out? And then offer a perspective over a decade later on, okay, did we get it right? And what do we think of it now in retrospect, having seen these movies several times, and had years to kind of reflect on and come to terms with these things, what do we think now? So if you'll take my arm, Jim Fan, we'll head down memory lane together.
Let's go.
The ancient past. So the first one is the so-called White Witch. This one's kind of before your time, although I'd be curious to still get your thoughts on it anyway, but the White Witch, and I'm holding up air quotes when I say white. Of course, you hear a favorite book is being made into a movie, and especially a book that's so famous like and iconic like Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. You're looking forward to seeing your favorite characters and scenes and such come to life. That's really exciting to see talented artists and flesh and blood people turn these imaginary characters into real life. So The White Witch was definitely one, oh, I can't wait to see what the White Witch looks like. And even several months before the movie had come out, we had no clue what she looked like. We knew Tilda Swinton was playing her, and that's about it. Our first glimpse, apparently, was in March 2005. We got a glimpse of a collectible action figure from Weta that showed the so-called White Witch. But she wasn't white. And I'm like, maybe this isn't the final design. Maybe this isn't what the movie is going to look like. It's just what the toy looks like for some reason. And I just remember going, okay, I get it. They've got to change some things to turn the book into a movie. I get it. But guys, it's not rocket science. The White Witch should be white. Do I have to fly down there to New Zealand and explain this to you guys? The White Witch should be white. The book says that she was white like snow or paper. And that's the icon that's burned into my mind. And I do kind of feel like a lot of Narnia Webbers were going, yeah, that's weird. What are they doing? But I was the one that was more freaked out than everyone else about it for some reason. But what is that something when you saw the movie or when you started getting into it, do you remember having any thoughts of why isn't the White Witch white? What are they do? Or as nearly as white as she is in the book?
No, the only reason why I ever took any notice of that was because I knew other people had a much more of an opinion about it. For me, I always thought that the design of the White Witch for the film was pretty awesome. There was just so much like symbolism packed in there. And so it wasn't a direct translation from the book, but it was very fitting with what they were trying to portray with her character in just like the different things that they did with her costumes and her hair and her crown.
She kind of melts along.
Yeah, she kind of melts and becomes muddied as she loses her power.
And her crown gets smaller.
Yep, like her crown melts until it's eventually gone and she has to replace it with something else. So like overall, like I thought the design was so good that I wasn't really like terribly concerned about the fact that she wasn't paper white. Like I felt like as far as the White Witch goes, she is white enough that she's white. You know what I mean?
In retrospect, having had several years now, I've come to terms with this. And I do agree, it works well for the movie to see her kind of melt away as her power melts away. And I even had the thought recently, I don't know how deep they were really thinking about this, but so we know from The Magician's Nephew, she turned white when she gained her immortality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she got her heart's desire and with it despair. So by the fact that she starts melting basically and losing her whiteness as Aslan comes, has she essentially lost her immortality? Has something happened to her as a result of Aslan coming? Mm. I don't know if that's what they were trying to suggest, but it's something that I'm okay with because, yeah, I like the design of the White Witch. I like her dress. I like her hair. I like the very simple approach they took to her look. They could have made her, you know, added all kinds of crazy Queen Amidala kind of dresses
right.
and stuff, but they kept it very, very simple, which I appreciate. So it works fine for the movie, but the initial disappointment of, but I've got that image in my head that I remember reading as a kid, and I want to see that come to life, and that disappointment. I still feel that when I watch it, even though, yeah. But look, it's not the most important thing, obviously. And I do want to cheat a little bit, because there's another thing very, very similar that happened on Prince Caspian. There was another character. It was the opposite problem. They made a important, memorable character white when I did not want that character to be white. And that was Reepy Cheep. So this happened when I was on the Prince Caspian set in Prague, and I was watching them film the scene leading up to the single combat. Will Mosley and Skander are walking up, and Skander is holding Will's sword and all that. And as they're filming, I look behind the camera, and I notice there's like a you know, life-size, what looks like a stuffed animal of a mouse on its hind legs. And they often make those for CG characters to use as lighting reference and reference for the actors so they can see what they look like and stuff like that. And I asked one of the crew members, what's that supposed to be? And they said, Reepy Cheep. And I didn't say this, but my thought was, better not be. Because it was a mouse with white fur.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've got the Pauline Baynes illustration burned into my head, and the black fur with the gold circlet on it and the feather. That's so
yep.
awesome. That's what Reepy Cheep looks like. And I made that into, I was determined to turn that into a controversial issue, to be honest, even though, again, no one was reacting quite as much as I was. And happy ending. He ended up brown in the final movie.
Yeah. I don't really think it, like, I just artistically, I don't really see how this white mouse would have even looked. So yeah, I'm glad, just because I don't think it would have been aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, this is Narnia, not Pinky in the Brain. Come on.
Right?
I was actually reunited with that white mouse recently because he's on display at the Logos Theater.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I was like, oh, so
long
we meet
time
again.
To see.
We meet again. But happy
old
ending.
Enemy.
Yes. happy ending. Reepy Cheep ended up with brown fur, which is fine. I'll take it. All right, next one. I got another one here. This is so that White Witch one, that was a long developing one for many, many months leading up to the release. This next one came out just a couple months before the movie came out, and it kind of ended as quickly as it began, and that was the Four Winds line. And I'm betting there's some people listening that went, wow, I totally forgot about that. So basically, this came... it was a review of a very rough cut of the movie that came out a few months before the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie came out. And they showed it to a group of people who were giving thoughts on it. And the reviewer said, the major complaint of the Narnia experts in the panel was that during the coronation scene, the children are not crowned in the name of the Emperor Beyond the Sea, but rather in the name of the Four Winds and their powers.
Dun, dun, dun.
And we all went, what? Well... So first off, I have to point out, the reviewer got something wrong. The book does not say the kids were crowned in the name of the Emperor Beyond the Sea. It doesn't say that at all. I think that caused some people that didn't remember the book as well to freak out.
Yes.
So for me, I remembered that, and I was just confused. Like, well, what does the Four Winds mean? I don't really get it. And so I was just, it's not so much, well, how could they do that? It was more, I don't quite understand what they've done exactly.
Right.
So what's your memory of that? Because you were around at this point.
I was around. I remember being like, okay, I don't really understand why, like, it's such a big deal. Like, at face value, it was like, whatever. And then when people were like, they started to break it down and they're like, oh, this is wrong, because if it's supposed to be in the name of the Emperor Beyond the Sea, then it's like, oh, they're getting their authority and power derived from you know, the Emperor Beyond the Sea instead of some like mystical nature force, and it's they're taking Jesus out of Narnia and whatever. And I'm like, I think that's probably going a little bit too far. But that was the sort of things I remember reading.
Yeah, I remember not getting into that one as much just because I was just more confused than anything else. But interestingly, this line, or whatever it was, likely was removed due to the intense fan reaction, for better or worse. Although I think it's possible that some remnants of it are still in the movie, because Aslan does say, you know, to the clear northern sky, I give you King Peter. And he kind of, each one of the kids gets a point of the compass as he's kind of crowning them. So I kind of wonder if that's some kind of a remnant from that. But you're probably right. I think it was more some people had... had theological issues with it more than anything else.
Yes. That was my understanding of that whole controversy.
And so that's an example of something where we get a little bit of information and it tickles something we're sensitive about. And so we kind of blow it, probably blow it way out of proportion because we're really, really worried about something already.
Yes. I mean, this is Narnia fans. Like, no detail is too small to be discussed
Heck
endlessly.
No. Nothing is beneath us.
Nothing.
Okay. Well, you've got the mother of them all now.
Probably the most infamous one.
Yes.
This
possibly
is
our fault.
Yeah, possibly our fault. Probably not. I just think we and the productions tended to, share similar ideas. Just we thought about them differently. So the next one, this is for the Prince Caspian film, and this is the infamous Susan Caspian romance, which has a long and illustrious history with Narnia Web. If you've never heard the story, I'm not sure where you've been, but I'll just briefly recap it. Basically, back in 2006, Narnia Web ran some April Fool's news stories.
We've taken a break from April Fool's generally, or taken different approaches to it, in part because of this.
Yes, because everyone's scared now. Because basically we, and I say we, this was, who wrote this? Was it Rillian?
Rillian came up with this particular one.
Okay,
yes,
so Rillian came up with this idea, and basically it was like a news article that said, yeah, we just, got, some news about the Prince Caspian movie, and Susan and Caspian are going to be having a romance in it, and, they think they're going to add... romance and drama to present. I don't exactly remember. I've tried to block it from my memory. But anyway, we're joking about it, right? Har, har, har. We're so funny because that could not possibly ever be true.
We're joking about this because, number one, it's ridiculous. Number two, if you believe it, you'll freak out. And if you don't believe it, you'll laugh.
Yeah. So basically, so then it was almost a year later, we got some backdoor, under-the-table casting information for the Prince Caspian film. So this was when Prince Caspian, when Ben Barnes had not been cast yet. And this information we got had, it hinted at like some sort of Susan Caspian attraction. And so this news...
I think it said that Caspian had to be, quote, fancied by Susan.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what it said because this was something that was not widely... Like, this was very... backdoor, under the table. This was not widely, broadly published. But it started getting some people thinking, like, oh my gosh, like, is this for real? And so it started to be something that I think Susan Caspian, I think it's naturally something that we kind of maybe all wondered about, and we're like, every now and then we're like, oh, haha, whatever.
What if they did a Caspian Susan romance?
What if they did it? And then it got to the point where we're interviewing Douglas Gresham, and we asked him about it, we've heard that this is, a thing. What is going on with that? Is this something we need to be worried about? And basically he's like, and I'm trying to find the exact quote here.
I'll tell it.
You can quote it verbatim.
I think pretty much the exact quote. It was, if I were you, I'd be far more worried about global warming, I believe was the quote.
So we're like, okay.
whatever his intentions were, because some people took that to mean, oh, don't worry. Like, does he mean by that, oh, don't worry, there's not going to be a Caspian Susan romance? Or did he mean, yeah, there is, but grow up, guys? Like, we weren't really sure how to take it.
I think it was fair to say that did not quite quell any fears And so, you know, it was always this thing that was kind of like humming in the background, like, oh my gosh, is this real? Is this real? And then, like, I think it was like a month or two before Prince Caspian came out, there was a TV spot that aired.
That was the bombshell.
Yep. And there was a kiss in it. And we were like, yep, it's real. I mean, I think I've heard you talk about this enough, but tell us again.
Well,
how do you feel about that? How did you feel about that?
Well, I'll say that I think that TV spot, which was, there was a whole 30-second TV spot completely focused on the all the beats of this Susan Caspian relationship, including they show them kiss at the very end. This is like just a couple months before the Prince Caspian movie came out. Dare I suggest, I think this hit me maybe harder than other Narnia Webbers, and here's why. I was in complete denial about this every step of the way. I think most other Narnia Webbers were kind of seeing the writing on the wall and looking at the different rumors and nuggets and going, oh man, is it? It's possible there is a straight up Caspian Susan romance. It's possible. So they were at least prepared for it.
Yeah.
Me, every step of the way, I was saying there is no way they would do that. And partially because we did the April Fool's joke. It's like, there's no way. The gods are not that cruel. There's no way it would turn out to be real. And I was saying, oh, it's just us shallow Americans are seeing, like, maybe there's one scene where Caspian kisses Susan's hand, and it's just a total, it's a big nothing. Or it's just us shallow Americans, the two attractive people in the movie of the opposite sex, and they're about the same age, and we want to ship them together. Gosh, what are we, that's all it is. That's all that's going on here. People are way overreacting to it. I was so determined to deny this every step of the way. So, when I was even kind of laughing at the people that were getting freaked out by it, because I'm like, come on, guys, there's no way this is going to happen.
Possibly.
When the TV spot hit, it really, I'm feeling the old wounds open right now. a lot of the other issues we're talking about in this episode, I've come to terms with it and I moved on and I can joke about it. But this one still hurts. It felt like such a betrayal.
I remember hearing the rumors and just kind of, you know, being like, you know, I honestly could see them going in that direction. I hope they don't. But, you know, yeah, maybe it is me. You know, good old American, you know, like, you know, two attractive people around the same age. You know, this is a Hollywood blockbuster. This is probably not, it would be weird if there wasn't. And I say this like from a purely like very cynical perspective. But so I kind of had come to peace with it. I was like, this is not where I'm gonna, like, you know, lay my life down on the line and just like die over it.
But I mean,
I wasn't happy.
I definitely think, look, I've had, you know, over a decade now to come to terms with the Caspian Susan romance, and I guess that's not enough time, because it's still it's a bucket of cold water on you right at the very end of that movie, when even when a lot of other things are working, that's just nails on the chalkboard.
Yeah.
And just because of how hokey it is. And as a fan of the book, the problem with it is the most interesting idea in the Prince Caspian book, in my opinion, is Caspian gets to meet characters from his bedtime stories. The myth becoming fact. The ancient past coming back. And he should be in awe of Susan. He shouldn't see Susan. He sees Susan in the movie, and he immediately wants to hook up. That's his reaction. It should be, oh my gosh, this is Queen Susan the Gentle from the ancient past. That should be his reaction. And so it cheapens that, apart from just being weak filmmaking.
Yeah. I think when you change things about Caspian, some fundamental things about him in as far as like his age and his situation, which they did for the film, I think it does change his reactions. You know, if they had gone with the more age accurate Caspian, I think it would have been a lot closer to what you described. But
right.
Just because they did go the older route, it makes sense that his reaction would have changed as well. But I know what you mean.
I disagree.
And that's
I'm trying to think of like someone my age from history. If I was able to meet someone from like hundreds of years ago, some significant historical figure, I really don't think, no matter how sexy they were, my first thought would be to kind of check them out. You know, I just can't. I'd be so in awe of getting to meet. I can't think of a great example right now, but I don't think it's like, oh, of course. And some people were saying that, oh, he's a guy, of course he's going to do that. Yeah. Baloney, and it's a movie, okay? Like,
he can do whatever he wants.
I'm not here because I want a dose of real life, okay?
This is a movie. It's not reality.
It cheapens the movie, and it waters down some of the main themes.
And honestly, I think a lot comes down to when you think about, and this is just my broad opinion, but when you think about certain nitpicky, I would never call this nitpicky.
No, I would.
But when you think about certain things in Prince Caspian, the film, which don't really jive or they don't really line up with the books, a lot of it comes down to there was a fundamental mindset perspective shift. And when they made the film, they did a lot of fundamental changes from the book, which had ripple effects. And I think this is part of it. I'm not saying that it had to be a part of it. I just think it was...
No.
You know.
Sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. No.
You know, that's just what I think.
Yeah, I mean, there are things in the Prince Caspian movie that are huge changes from the book that I'm okay with, and there's things that I'm not okay with, but I understand. This is neither of those.
Yeah.
I'm not okay with it, and I don't.
This is. I feel more about that about Don Treader, but we'll get there.
I want that TV spot. I wonder if did they make that TV spot that basically gave us every beat of the romance, including the kiss? Was that like? I think it shows her. It shows Caspian save Susan, and she jumps up on his horse, and they kiss at the end. I wonder why they made that. Did they produce that TV spot because they went, oh, romance, that's something else we can sell the movie on? It's very possible. Or was it, we need to give the fans a few weeks to kind of calm down about this?
I think it's the first.
It probably is. Or it could be a combination of both.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's been, like, I've moved on in the sense that it's, I can watch the movie and not totally kill myself. But I have not moved on in the sense that, first off, that first time I saw the TV spot, that still feels fresh. I felt like, filmmakers, I've been sticking up for you, and you're making me, you're letting me down.
You really tried.
So now you know why we're much more careful about our in our new Web April Fool's jokes when we do them.
Yes. Well, let's talk about one that's maybe not quite so painful.
Okay, let's take a break. Step back.
Yes. I think this one's more interesting than painful. Yes. The concept of there being good Minotaurs, I remember being quite...
Mm-hmm. In Prince Caspian.
In Prince Caspian, being quite a topic of discussion. Because if you're familiar with the books, basically you have your good creatures and you have your bad creatures, and you don't really see a lot of like
the Minotaurs are bad, the Centaurs are good, you have the dwarves that are, you know, they can kind of
go either way,
but for the most part, you know, it's pretty black and white.
There's very fairly clear lines you feel in the books, but back in. You know, about a year before Prince Caspian came out, you know, we're still getting casting news. And we know that Shane Rangi, who is he's done a lot of stunt work on the Narnia films and a lot of the costume characters, we find that he is being cast as a Minotaur. And we're like, okay, so maybe a bad guy. And then we, a month or two later, then we get this production blog that introduces a named character. Minotaur character who is going to be fighting with the Narnians. So
Asterius.
Essentially a good Narnian Minotaur. And that kind of threw people for a loop. I remember they were just like, wait, I didn't realize that they could be good. And good old Narnia Web, of course, we asked Douglas Gresham about it. His quote, which I'll share here because I think it kind of explains the mindset behind it pretty well. He says, firstly, we felt that we needed to show that in Narnia as here, old foes can be forgiven and can reconcile and work together, given the will to do so. Secondly, that in Narnia as it is here, a common adversary will bring even the worst enemies together and unite them. So he's referencing Miraz and how he's trying to destroy old Narnia.
Right.
And then also that the shapes and colors of a species' body do not necessarily denote their character, that just because someone is a Minotaur does not mean that they have to be all bad. And finally, we kind of like Minotaurs.
I love
honestly, I really think the last bit is probably what kind of brought all the rest of it together. And I don't blame them. They did an awesome job on creating those characters and that species.
It's one of the most memorable things in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is the Minotaurs and the Centaurs.
I was like, okay, I can get behind that. I don't know, like, what was your end feeling on all of that?
Well, I'll give you my feeling right now first, because I think it's very important to understand the context. I think they have, like, when we first heard about it, they've, like, just started filming Prince Caspian. So we know very, very little about Prince Caspian. So this feels like a big deal.
Yeah.
I think the fact that we made such a big deal about it, like, now, having seen the movie, and there were way bigger issues and bigger changes they made to Prince Caspian, like, I barely even remember this was a thing, but at the time, it felt like such a big deal.
We needed something to talk about.
Exactly. It felt like such a big deal. So I guess it was something where I was disappointed in a way that I like the idea of Narnia having the black and white, the simple good and evil. Again, I don't really even really notice it looking at it now. I think it plays just fine, especially since, I mean, the whole point of, I don't really know if this is really their intention, but, you know, the whole point is that Narnia used, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe of Narnia was a simpler time, and now things have gotten complicated and muddy, and maybe things are a little more gray and morally complex, and the fairy tale simplicity of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is gone from this world, tragically. And so to muddy the waters a bit and have a Minotaur be good, I think is consistent with that. I don't think it, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that much either way. I do totally agree with you, though, that at the end of the day, it was they liked Minotaurs, then they had to kind of maybe they were searching for a justification after they decided we like Minotaurs, we want them in the movie. And we were probably a similar thing with Dawn Treader, by the way. That was an issue, having creatures, because in the Dawn Treader movie, in the book, it's all an entirely human crew.
Yeah.
And we even speculated, I bet they're going to try to add some creatures. And they'll probably do fauns and Minotaurs. Will they do centaurs? Will they try to put centaurs on board the Dawn Treader? No way. They wouldn't do that, I remember, which they didn't. But so once they announced Minotaurs were going to be on, and fauns were going to be on the Dawn Treader, it was sort of like, called it.
Yeah.
Which, I think that's, because the creature design is one of the most memorable aspects of these films. Still the best movie centaurs ever done. So
it felt fantastic work.
Yeah, it felt like a big deal at the time, but now it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, it was, I think it was a good decision. Like, I'm not saying it had a major impact on the story either way, but it was nice being able to see them again. And the Minotaur character, he had a nice moment. Having the Minotaurs in there, I thought, added a nice variety, and it just made it look good. So,
At the end of the day, it works well for the movie, and I think it's a pretty minor change from the book. So, hey, why not? It works for the movie.
So, moving on, this is probably...
Into rougher waters.
This one was pretty... This was major. In hindsight, I don't think we really realized it at the time. This has to do with Voyage of the Dawn Treader and a leaked script that came out.
The leaked script.
Mid-2008. So this is right after Prince Caspian came out. This is... Dawn Treader has been greenlit. It is starting pre-production. Disney was still involved at this point. This is before Disney decided to withdraw from the Narnia franchise. But basically, and I don't even remember how it happened, but there was a leaked script that came out. It surfaced on the internet, and it was mostly complete. I think it was pretty much the whole movie except maybe the very last bit.
It's funny you think, like, you know, all the stuff we're talking about in this episode, it's usually a trickle of a report here, a little thing here, and a rumor here. This is boom, a whole script. Here
everything
you go.
Everything at once. And it was crazy because, you know, you read the script and it's just, there's some stuff and it's so far out there. Like, the biggest thing is that the Lady of the Green Kirtle is in it. So this is, you know, the big villain from Silver Chair, right? So
I know they talk about her. She's actually in it. Does she have dialogue? I forget.
I don't remember exactly. I just know that she's like, actually mentioned and referenced.
They talk about her. She's the source of the mist, right?
So because basically there's this whole thing where, like, there's this big overarching plot where there's disappearing, like, Narnians are disappearing from Narnia, you know, and, like, one of them is Trumpkin's wife, you know, like, he wants to And so part of the reason why
I forgot about Trumpkin's wife.
Yeah, so part of the reason why the Dawn Treader is going out is because they're trying to find the Lords, but they're also trying to figure out what's going on. So there's this big overarching plot that's driving it. And there's other stuff in there, like there's a ton of action. There was a huge battle. There's and I put this in quotes, a soul-eating cave. I don't even know how to describe that, but it was involved with how the people were disappearing and they were getting hypnotized and they're walking into the cave, never to be seen again. I don't even know. I've tried to block it from my memory.
Yeah.
And then there's other stuff like Lucy has this outright crush on Caspian.
Oh my gosh. She's jealous, right? Because Caspian's having these visions of, I think they call her a star girl.
Yeah,
who's Romandu's daughter. And he's saying I'm having visions or dreams about her or whatever. And Lucy's clearly jealous.
Yeah, and
I forgot about that.
And there's the blue star and he's following the blue star and whatever. So obviously this came out and pretty much everyone who got their hands on it, which arguably is not a ton of people, but it was decently circulated. I mean, I saw it.
It was up for a short time and then I think taken down. So it was the lucky people that saved it before it disappeared who really got to analyze it.
Yes.
Or not so lucky, perhaps.
And then, it's passed around on back ends of whatever the dark web
dark
was.
Dark alleys of Narnia web.
Yeah. But basically, pretty much shortly after that, this leaks script out, you get something from an actual production member of Dawn Treader who said, this is a super early, very experimental draft. This is not the final draft. This is not even anywhere close to the final draft. This is not something you need to be worried about. This is not meant for you guys to see, obviously.
Mind you, they didn't say, oh, don't worry. There's no green mist. None of that's not in there. Didn't say any of that. Just said, guys, don't worry about it. This is early. That's all they said.
Yeah. And so we're all good. Cause that was kind of crazy. So I remember it just being concerning, just thinking, okay, so is this, how is this even on the table, that this is the direction that they were even considering going in? But, I'm sure they got it all smoothed out and they took all that weird stuff. I'm sure
we're all going to have a big laugh about this later.
I'm sure we will. And so, this is in 08, right? So this is 2 years before the movie comes out. So we don't hear anything else for a really long time. And then we start, getting actual movie news. Mm-hmm. And we start seeing bits and pieces of things. And
Wait a minute, this looks familiar.
And we're that just seems really familiar.
Where have I heard that before?
Why do I think I know this? Why does this particular plot point or this character seem familiar? And then suddenly it starts to dawn on people, oh my gosh, this is actual remnants of this leaked script. And basically, I think it got up to the point where there was one of the trailers came out where there was actual green mist.
Yeah.
And when you talk about the Susan Caspian, seeing that in the TV spot, for me, that was actually seeing the green mist. Oh my gosh, they actually did it.
You've been clinging to that memo that, they just said it's experimental. It was just experimental. It's okay. It's okay.
And so basically, in hindsight, so the movie came out, we have chance to analyze it. We compare the leaked script to the movie, and basically, the essential plot line is the same. They just took out all the references.
They took out all the details and the kind of the exposition of the kind of the rationale behind the green mist.
They just took out all the references to the Lady of the Green Kirtle.
They just minimized it as much as possible, basically.
But they left. Okay, so they're but we still need our big end of the world, we need to save Narnia thing. So they had to keep something in there. So basically, they took out all the really big, expensive, and super controversial stuff and just left with, okay, we've got green mist and we've got a blue star and we've got Lucy, she's growing up. And so she, tucks her hair behind her ear, but it's not a full on jealousy, whatever. But there's little bits that got left in there. And I said this at the time and I will say it again. If I had to choose between the leaked script and the film that we got, I take the leaked script any day because at least that had an actual like backbone. It had like actual agency of like they had the villain. It was stupid. Don't get me wrong. It was so stupid. But at least it had
somewhat
like,
coherent.
It had actual plot. It had actual detail. Whereas the film we got was just it was even stupider because it didn't even make any sense.
But you would have you would have preferred they produced the leaked script over the script they ended up going with.
Maybe that one at least would have been interesting.
Interesting.
You know?
which in the North, interesting is a kind of a passive aggressive term. what'd you think? Interesting.
You know what I mean, though?
Basically, when you watch the final movie, it's like, wait, why? Like, why is to the Green Mist is just a thing? Okay,
it's
but
like, why do we have to put the swords in the table again? Like, what is the point?
What is this? How are the swords connected to the mist? What does that have to do with anything?
Exactly.
Like, all the questions. Like, basically, in the leaked script, they have answers. Now they're usually dumb answers. But at least they're answers.
Does it have to be in Don Treader? No. But if you absolutely insist, then do it that way.
So you're not saying you would have liked the leaked script being produced,
no, I'm
right?
not just, saying that at all.
You're just picking your poison. Okay.
But I'm just saying if I have to choose, I think that probably would have been the lesser of the two evils.
And if you're listening and you love the Don Treader movie, thanks so much for listening. Obviously, this is just our opinions. There are fans and listeners that really love the Don Treader movie, and we acknowledge that. But we've got the microphones in front of us right now, and so, you know,
yell
that's
at
what,
us in
that's
the
what
comments.
We're going to say. Heck yeah. Please. That's you're right. Yell at us in the comments. I don't know why the leaked script dropped in. I think I was just so busy with the Prince Caspian analysis and to have the leaked script just dropped on us. I mean, I read it very, very quickly. In my mind, it was, oh, this is obviously... Like, when they said it was experimental, I was like, guys, this is exactly what I've been saying. Like, we shouldn't make too much of this. They're just playing around. It's like... And I even kind of felt bad for them. You know, it was like, I kind of feel bad for the filmmakers. Or I can kind of relate to being forced to show people something that's not finished yet. Like, oh, don't look at it. It's not finished yet. So I kind of feel bad for filmmakers on some level when a script leaks or footage leaks or something when like, hey, this wasn't meant to be seen. Wait till we're ready to show it. I sympathize with that. So I was trying to be their voice and be like, guys, let's not freak out too much. Let's let them have their creative space. And because of that, again, just like the global warming thing, I guess I was maybe more blindsided by it than I should have been.
Yeah. I find that so funny that the things that you didn't pay as much attention to or didn't get as concerned about actually ended up being like the actual legit things that you should have been freaking out about.
So on the Netflix movies, I need to make sure I'm just
freaking out
as much as possible.
Yes.
What? Lucy's hair has to be blonde! No! I mean, whatever it is, just freak out as much as possible.
And then no one will take you seriously anymore, and then it will be fine.
But the movie will come out, and you'll thank me.
Yes.
It should make for some entertaining podcasting as well.
If your freak out saves the quality of the production, then I suppose it's well worth it.
I'm willing to sacrifice my dignity for the good of the film, because I love you guys. I love Narnia and Narnia Webbers. Well, this is fun, isn't it? Reopening some of these old wounds and all the things that stressed us out. I wanted to end on something that was just more fun looking back on it. This is, again, from the Don Treader film. And it was just more it wasn't so much that we were all up in arms about it, as more as the way it developed was confusing. And I am referring to the MLG. Or which stands for The Mysterious Little Girl. So Don Treader, the experience of anticipating Don Treader was, there was something distinctly different from the first two movies from our perspective, in that it was the first time when it was very common to have phones with high resolution cameras on them.
Yes.
That was a thing. And so we were getting, like, for things like Don Treader, where they were filming in Australia and basically built a full-size ship, They built it in an area that was very difficult for them to hide, so people could just hold up their cameras and take photos and occasionally video. And we could just see what they were filming, and we could analyze, you know, hundreds of photos and try to figure out what was going on in the movie. And usually it was, oh, what's Caspian and Edmund? What are they saying in this scene? And remember, we saw them sword fighting at one point, and we're like, now we're pretty sure they're just playing around, right? They're not actually fighting, and we turned out to be right. So through a lot of this avalanche of set photos, there's this somewhere in the background, there's this little girl wearing a pink nightgown, and no one's really noticing her because there's literally bigger things than her going on that we're analyzing. Yes. And finally, over time, after a while, someone says, what's up with the little girl in the pink nightgown? We weren't even sure, is she like a part of a character in the movie, or is she like one of the producer's kids or something? You know, we really weren't sure. And finally, she keeps on. She's never like featured prominently. She's always like where is Waldo or something. She's always just kind of hiding somewhere in the background. And she kept on appearing. And finally, we call. Actually, I'm very proud. I'd forgotten about this, but I came up with the term MLG. Proud of that one. That's certainly my biggest contribution to Narnia Web for sure.
Oh, please.
We started calling her the MLG, the mysterious little girl. And we're like, is she really in this movie? And we get footage of her like with dialogue. Oh, like filming a scene. Okay, I guess she's in the movie. Who is this character? And then I think the big bombshell moment was when we got the video of her jumping off of the ship into the water.
Yeah,
and Lucy shouts,
that.
Gail! And we could make out. We could hear Georgie shouting Gail and went, oh, I guess her name is Gail. So now we can call her Mysterious Little Gail.
Yes.
And we're still going, what is this scene? What's going on here? It just went into, who is that random person? Is she even in the movie? To, oh my gosh, I guess she's a full-fledged character. And my favorite part of this story, though, is that a report comes in, and we're trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Well, actually, apparently this is not an MLG, it's an MLB. This character's being played by a boy. And we're like, what? And speculation went crazy, like, is this a little boy playing a little girl character that's been known to happen before, I guess? Like, I don't know, Shakespeare did it. like, what's happening here? And it eventually came out that, okay, this character is being played by Arabella Morton, and her stunt double for that scene was a boy, what was going on there. But it just got this little thing that just developed and got crazier and crazier, because she's not in the leaked script, I don't think.
No, she's not. She was put in, I think, as a substitute for Trumpkin's wife.
Yes.
Because they needed to have a personal motivation. You know, someone that you knew who was
had a stake
who had
in
been
this.
Consumed.
Yeah.
You know, and which is the sailor, like the Gail's mom.
Yeah.
So when they took out Trumpkin's wife, then it's like, okay, well, we need something else. We need that emotional connection point. So then they added in this other character.
I totally forgot about Trumpkin. For a while, we thought it was basically confirmed that Trumpkin was going to be in the movie.
Yeah.
And then eventually figured out he wasn't. Well, this is so much fun. It makes me, if you're listening to this, and I hope it makes you, it may sound like we've just been here sitting in agony about this, but looking forward to Netflix, like literally whatever happens with the Netflix movies, whether they're good or bad, and believe me, I want them to be good.
Yes.
And if they're going to be bad, I'd rather them not be made. But if they're going to be made, good or bad, I'm looking forward to the sense of community that's going to develop. The oh so fun adventures we're gonna have together, where we're tearing our hair out, but we're tearing our hair out together,
and we're doing it because we like it, people.
Because and it's fun to do it with other people.
Yes, it's not fun to suffer on your own.
Exactly,
or to be excited on your own. It's your joy and your sorrow is always amplified with other people. So,
and just like that C.S. Lewis quote I mentioned at the beginning, it's the great reminder that, oh, I'm not the only. This is, to me, this is what Narnia Web is all about. Just the reminder that, oh, I'm not the only person that really cares about this beyond just, oh, I want a couple hours of entertainment. Beyond that, we take it personally, and maybe sometimes we overreact to little things. We have to calm down and in retrospect kind of, you know, reevaluate how we feel about that. But it's just because we care so deeply about the story overall. And so we're inclined to freak out. And if we're going to do that, it's fun to do it with other people. So further up and further into the Netflix movies, let's see what happens.
Woo-hoo!
Let's take the adventure that comes to us.
Yes.
But first, we're going to try to stump you.
Oh, boy. Okay, let's go.
The last stump question of the season. Jim Fan, are you ready?
We'll see.
Jim Fan, which of the four Pevensey actors is not known by their given name?
Ooh, wait. Oh, I definitely don't know the real name, but I feel like it is... It's either Anna or Skandar. I don't remember, but I feel like it's one of the two.
Which one is it? You must make a choice.
I must make a choice. If I had to make a choice, I would say... Let's go with Skandar. I have a gut feeling, but I think I'm wrong.
So you're saying that Skandar is not actually his real name. Is that your final answer?
Yes.
The correct answer is Mr. Alexander Amin Casper Keynes, better known as Skandar.
I knew it was something ridiculous like that. I knew it. I was like, I've heard this before, but I can't remember.
Uh-huh. So Skandar is the Eastern variant of Alexander. Skander, by the way, didn't do any movies after Don Shredder, and he's currently working as a political advisor in London, which is funny because after he played Edmund, I kind of predicted that he would be the one to go on and probably of the four was the most likely to have a great acting career. And the exact opposite happened. He was the only one that didn't do anything at all acting after Narnia.
I always thought he always seemed like the most naturally gifted actor out of the four of them. But it seems like he's doing things that he loves, so...
A descendant of Charles Darwin, by the way.
Yes.
All right, well, that's it for season four. We'll see you next season. We're going to take a few months off and come back. In the meantime, be sure to check out the Talking Beast Facebook group. The discussion can continue in there, as well as a new Facebook group we just started just for all things Narnia. It's not just for podcast listeners. It's for anybody. So we really want to start building that up, and we want that to be a place on Facebook for... high-quality, insightful discussion about Chronicles of Narnia. There's also a few other Narnia podcasts out there, by the way, I want to remind you about. There's the Lamp Post Listener, which is a couple Narnia novices basically reading this for the first time in real time, essentially. There's Further Up, Looking for Lewis. That one's super, really long, super chill, super conversational. There's Further Up and Further In. That's just one voice, one guy, and that one gets very deep and theological. And then there's my personal favorite, which is Pints with Jack. And that one focuses on, they talk about Narnia a little bit, but it's much more focused on C.S. Lewis's other works. They've gone through Mere Christianity and The Great Divorce chapter by chapter. If you love Narnia and are curious about C.S. Lewis's other works, this might be a way in for you. Obviously, wouldn't want it to replace your reading of the books themselves, but it could be a really good introduction. I found them very entertaining and very well done, very insightful. So that's it for this season. It's been a long one. We're going to take a few months off and we'll be back. Jim Fan, go ahead and take us out of this season.
All right. Well, you guys have been listening to Talking Beasts, a Narnia Web podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend and give us 5 stars on iTunes. And be sure to subscribe and post a comment below or in the Talking Beasts Facebook group. And you can also email us at podcast@narniaweb.com. glumpuddle@narniaweb.com or jimfan15@narniaweb.com. If you have more discussion, visit the Talking Beast Facebook group. And that's it for season 4. Until next time, further up and further in.